It's time now for Minnesota Reads, a program talking about Minnesota books and Minnesota authors. And we're speaking this morning with Rick Shefchik, who's written a book called Everybody's Heard About the Word, the true story of 1960s rock and roll in Minnesota. Rick, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chris.
This is an exciting book to see. Maybe people know, of course, kind of a pun to say, everybody has heard about The Bird, Surfin' Bird, the song by the Trashmen, a Minneapolis band. They probably know Liar, Liar by the Castaways, another big 1960s rock and roll hit. But maybe they aren't quite aware of the vibrant music scene that existed in that decade in Minneapolis and Twin Cities area. Can you tell me a little bit about the inspiration for writing this book?
Yeah, these were songs that I grew up with. I was born and raised in Duluth and was listening to the radio from the time I was a little kid. WEBC in Duluth, was the rock and roll station that we all listened to back then. And the songs that were coming out of Soma Records in the Twin Cities, the songs that were being recorded at K-Bank Studio, were getting played on the air in regular rotation with a lot of the national and, even the British Invasion hits. And it just always kind of fascinated me that there was such a strong music scene in Minnesota that that local bands could get airplay. They would come up and play Duluth, play the Armory, play the Curling Club. And even the Northern Minnesota bands would have a lot of success. They would get played as well. Growing up with that scene, I really wanted to know more about those bands. And there really hadn't been a book like this. It's a book that I would have bought years ago if something like that had existed. And I finally decided, well, somebody should write it, so I did.
That's great. Now, the music scene back then was a little different. I feel like I read so much about regional hits existing, these small labels that were able to get a lot of airplay in their region. How did songs like Surfin' Bird or Liar, Liar, or songs by the Jesters or other bands, how did they catch on? How did they get national play?
Well, that was really what I wanted to find out when I got started researching this project. And, of course, it starts with local airplay. Back then, bands would want to promote themselves by recording a 45. And initially, prior to the success of Surfin' Bird, they didn't have much expectation of getting airplay. But it was always good to have a 45 of two songs that you could give away at your dance jobs. But once Surfin' Bird became a real big local hit, the Heilecker brothers, who owned Soma Records, they also were record distributors, so they would send out copies of the record to radio stations and to record stores around the country just to see if it would catch on. And in this case, it did. Surfin' Bird went number one in the Twin Cities, and then it went to number four nationally. Slow, steady climb, because it was just such an interesting record. It was so different from anything else that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And once that happened, that sort of established a pattern. That if the record company, if Soma got behind you, if they liked a song, not only would they push it locally, but if it became a hit locally, they would make sure that it would get out to their regional distribution areas. And although they didn't always penetrate every market in the country, because they had good relations with some markets, some they didn't distribute to so well. But it was good enough that they could get some national airplay with those records.
The scene back then, I don't know if we take for granted now that the Minnesota music scene is so vibrant. It seems like there's a place to play in every town, several places to play, and there are so many bands really working hard. Do we take for granted, I think, now how different the music scene is now from what it was like when the Trashmen and other bands were trying to establish themselves? Was it a little more limited, a little more restrictive back then?
I'd say almost the opposite. There were teen dances everywhere back then. Now, the bar scene wasn't very big in terms of the places to play rock and roll, but that didn't really come into play for quite a few years, not until the late 60s and into the early 70s. In the early 60s, you had this baby boom generation that was just getting old enough to go out to spend some money, and they were teenagers. They weren't looking for places to drink. They were looking for places to dance. They wanted to hear music. So not only did you have teen dances and teen clubs in the Twin Cities area and in the Duluth and Northern Minnesota, But you also had these ballrooms all over Minnesota that had previously hosted big band dances, and the ballroom operators were starting to sense that the money really was now to be made by booking rock and roll bands and bringing the teenagers in. So that was huge. There were so many places to play that there was 500 bands operating in the mid-1960s, and they all had places to play.
Wow. We're speaking with Rick Shevchik, the author of Everybody's Heard About the Word, a true story of 1960s rock and roll in Minnesota. There, this book is, it's not a pamphlet. This is a 300 pages or more. Great photographs, lots of first-person accounts. How did you even begin to go about researching and finding the people that you interviewed for this book?
Well, for me, it started with Bill Deal, who had been a friend of mine. I worked with him at the St. Paul Pioneer Press for 20 years, and he was, as he called himself, the Rajah of the records, the Prince of the Platters, the Deacon of the Discs.
Yes.
Bill agreed to do a long interview with me, and that got me started. That sort of laid the groundwork for what that scene was like. But then it was just a question of getting a phone number from, let's say I started with Tony Andreessen, lead guitarist of the Trashmen, and Tony connected me with a couple of other people, in particular Jim Johnson, the leader of the Underbeats. And it was just sort of one phone call led to another. And I kept asking, who else should I talk to? How do I get a hold of this person? And all the musicians who were still around were just incredibly cooperative. They enjoyed telling these stories again. They were very grateful that there was attention being paid again to their music. And, of course, when the book launched at the Electric Fetus in the Twin Cities, I had about 20 of the musicians from those bands who showed up just on their own time to sign copies of the book and greet fans who were there. We sold 150 copies in about 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So the desire to enjoy the nostalgia of that area is there, both on the part of the the book buying, record buying public, and the musicians themselves.
Yeah, that's one of the neat things I think about the Minnesota music scene I've found over the years is that, as you say, everybody knows everybody. It's not like these bands kind of keep to themselves and are isolated. Everybody knows the guitarist or the singer from that other band. They all grew up in the same neighborhoods, so people could connect you with all those people. It's a great way to do research.
Yeah, and as I came to find out, and I did not know this before I went into the project, there was a lot of band hopping that went on back then. They use the expression battle of the bands a lot because there would be sometimes up to 10 bands that would be booked in a day at, let's take the Aldrich Arena in St. Paul. And, maybe the impression given was that these guys didn't like each other. They were fighting each other, and the complete opposite was true. They were all friends. And, if somebody had to leave a band to go to college or if somebody got drafted, you looked at somebody in another band and had them join. The sort of the thread that runs through the book is what Jim Johnson of the Underbeats did to keep his band going. He was in Vietnam for 18 months back in the mid-60s when the band was at its peak, but he kept the Underbeats going by inviting James Walsh to play keyboards. He'd been in the Hot Half Dozen. He picked up Tommy Nystrom from the Accents to play drums, Rico Rosenbaum on guitar from the Escapades. So, and of course that caused shifts and people to fill in gaps with these other bands too. So there was, they all knew each other. They all played with each other, and it was a very friendly scene.
It also is fascinating to see too, that they weren't stuck in one genre as the style of music developed so rapidly through the 1960s into the 70s. A lot of bands were able to morph with that and develop their style.
Well, that's kind of stunning. And as I like to say with this book is if you just look at the pictures, leafing through it, you'll see how quickly not only styles of music, but styles of dress, the hairstyles. It's an incredibly compact 6-year period, basically from about 1961 to 1967, when the entire culture was just going through dramatic changes year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, the musicians kept up with that and actually pushed those styles. I mean, musicians were almost always at the forefront of what was going on culturally.
Rick, this is a fascinating book, and I'm so grateful that you wrote it, and I congratulate you on the success, too. It's nice to hear that those musicians showed up at the Fetus the other day to help you sign the book and get it out the door. That's really great. Thank you so much for writing this, and I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Chris. I enjoyed talking about it. Thank you.
Rick Shevchik, the author of Everybody's Heard About the Word, the true story of 1960s rock and roll in Minnesota, published this year by University of Minnesota Press. Rick is also the author of From Fields to Fairways, Classic Golf Clubs of Minnesota. This is Minnesota Reads, produced at KMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.